Hello, welcome to The Honest Wargamer. I'm your host, Rob. And in this video, we're going to be going through, the most insane changes we've seen to date for Age of Sigmar 4. In fact, I've just been reading through this with the chat. I'm so excited. I might trip over some of my words because the stuff you're going to be able to do in the new Age of Sigmar is crazy. So this has all come out in a new article on Warhammer Community site today, where they've talked about the command abilities and command points that you're going to be able to use in Age of Sigmar 4. And when I tell you this is going to rock your world, it's crazy. So it's super fun. Some of it, though, is also very wordy. It's very interesting, some of the changes. And please, like with all of my other videos, leave comments below the video. Give it a like as well. Subscribe if you can. That would all be really good. But the comments have been really important because just like when I live stream, whenever I do any of this stuff, I always live stream it because I like other people's opinions. It helps inform what I think about it because I'm me. You might be like, oh, I'm more of a chilled out, don't really care about the rules player. You might be like, I'm an absolute hardcore, love focusing on the rules person. And each one of those people has different opinions. I love reading about them in the comments. Drop them in the comments. Okay, command points, the important first thing. Okay, as we hinted to previously, command points are a tightly controlled resource. Each player gets 4 command points at the start of the battle round to spend over the course of that entire round, but there are 10 commands to use. The 10 commandments. Is there a secret church inside Games Workshop? That's a rumor. Any command points you haven't spent by the end of the battle round are gone forever. So there's no way of hoarding them. Now, there are other ways to get command points. As we saw, and if you go back and watch my video about regiments, if you end up having more auxiliaries than your opponent, then you will get an extra command point each battle round or each turn, one of the two. And seeing as what you can do with these command points is insane, that is almost going to guarantee you won't see armies with auxiliary choices. Because if neither of you have an auxiliary, no one gets an extra command point. Okay, the commands. Any ability with a command point cost is a command, and it has a little symbol over it. Little bit of a spoiler, there are command abilities that are 1 and 2. And while these are all the generic command abilities, I expect battle tomes in the future probably to have their own command abilities, potentially, and some of them maybe have really high costs if they do something wild. Each player gains 4 command points at the start of each battle round. The underdog gains 1 extra command point. We go on to find out about underdogs in a moment. Each unit can only use 1 command in each phase, although one unit could use multiple commands over multiple phases. That will be important later for our wombo combo. Each command can only be used 1 time by each army in each phase. Okay, so you can only use it the 1 time, which is fine because you have such a limited pool of command points. You must pay the command point cost to use a command. Fine. Okay, perfect. The army composition module may also affect your CP, as we talked about earlier, with auxiliary units. And the underdog rule can harvest 1 extra point each battle round. That's the player with the fewer victory points at the start of the round. This provides a powerful catch-up mechanic, ensuring the games remain closely fought. Now, this is going to be a big deal. Getting that extra command point is going to be big, especially with how it ties in with the priority role. Don't forget, if you end up taking the double turn with the priority role, you won't be able to score a battle tactic. Not being able to score a battle tactic means you're down points, but means you would later generate more command points. So you're going to have this very interesting kind of like, you know, swing set of resources, victory points being the one you want the most, but your units on the tabletop in conjunction with how much command points you can generate are all going to be very swingable, which is very, very interesting. So this probably gears you towards an early double turn. So you get the lowest drops possible, go first, you give your opponent the first turn, you take the second turn, then you get the double, you go twice, kill as much stuff as possible, you go down victory points, but then going down into turn 3, you have more command points. But obviously different armies will change differently, but that means it effectively stays exactly how it is now. Your pool of command points is an incredibly precious resource, as there are no abilities in the game that can generate additional points for now. Like with Age of Sigmar 3 at the start, I'm sure that will change in the future. Units and factions such as the disciplined OCR Bone Reapers, which previously relied on additional command points, can look forward to powerful new mechanics to compensate. Stay tuned for more info on the upcoming faction focus articles, which I'm very excited about because that's going to be 24 faction focus articles. Might technically be 23 with Beast of Chaos gone. RIP to my Beast Boys. But something like that, which is great. Loads of information before the game comes out. What's more, the restrictions on who can issue commands are gone. Needing to use generals, totems, heroes, unit champions, elite units to issue commands is a thing of the past. This makes using commands clear and concise while retaining the tough choice of when to use the core offensive and defensive abilities. Now, this is what we call a lowering of the skill ceiling. So if you're like new or someone who's pretty casual, you won't have to worry about who's a totem and how long your command range is for your mere general and those other things. I personally don't like that because I like high skill ceiling games because for me, they're more interactive. Being outside of range sucks, but when I do it right and I measure it and I'm like, I made it so they're inside command range and I'm really good at the game, that makes me feel really good because I like that. So this is definitely something that lowers the skill ceiling, which also means people can have a more enjoyable game if they aren't trying as hard or they're taking it in a more relaxed fashion. Let me know what you think about that. I'd be interested to know. Reactions. As we've seen, everything in the new edition is an ability, including commands, which all have clear timing shown, which phase they're used in. All of these commands are found in the command module, so no more hunting around to find them. And in the future, they may change the command module out for a different command module, which is interesting. 4 of the 10 commands are reaction abilities, which are used once you've declared an ability, but before the effective was resolved, bolstering that effect. One of the interesting things about reaction abilities, in quotation marks, having already read the article, is that 3 of the 4 reaction abilities are reactions to yourselves. So you don't have to worry too much. Using abilities. The timing of an ability tells you when it can be used. When using an ability, follow these steps. Declare the ability. Tell your opponent which ability is being used. If the ability has a declare instructions, resolve them at this step. Use reactions. Starting with the active player, the players alternate using any abilities with an appropriate reaction timing and resolve the effect, follow the instructions in the effect part of this ability. If any of you got a little bit of a headache or got a bit lost there, so did I when I read this, and I had to read this through a couple of times. Many people in the chat have pointed out this reads a lot like, you know, something you would see from Magic the Gathering and very non-Games Workshop in its like language. Some of you are going to like that, some of you are going to not like that. Again, I would really like you all to know what you think about this. I got my own thoughts, but I'm going to really reserve it. Sometimes games are very emotional, so you could just react. I want to know what everyone else thinks before I go further on this. Okay, let's start looking at some of these command abilities. All-out attack and all-out defense are familiar from previous editions, becoming reactions which occur once an attack has been declared. They have simple effects, making your chosen unit better on the offense or defense, and they are identical to Age of Sigmar 3. In fact, if we go look at, when we go look at the War Scroll later, I wouldn't be surprised if most of Age of Sigmar 4 is just re-clarified and re-cleaned up Age of Sigmar 3, in my opinion. But we'll see if that ends up being true as we get through. All-out attack is +1 to hit when you use an attack ability. And as we've seen at the top there, using the red icon, it shows you when it can be used. Green is a reaction to being attacked, and then a unit is targeted by an attack ability, and then you get +1 to your save rolls. This does mean that save stacking, or at least save increases, is still in Age of Sigmar. And this is an interesting point, because we've seen the Liberator War Scroll, and they have a 3-up armor save. This means that they can go to a 2-up armor save, which is very defensive, in my personal opinion. Now, rend might be higher, and defenses might be higher. We don't know enough right now, but this might put give us an idea that the game could be more lethal, because in order for the game to be in order to be lethal enough, you need to be able to get past a 2-up armor save Liberator, which is pretty defensive. So you need a lot of rend, a lot of attacks, and all of those other things. So the game is probably going to be as lethal, if not more lethal, than Age of Sigmar 3, based on all-out of defense still being in the game. Okay, next two are the double and forward to victory. And both of these are effectively the same as we saw in Age of Sigmar 3, but with one major difference. At the double allows you to add 6 inches to your move characteristic, and then you've done a run ability, which means you won't be able to charge. And then the other one, forward to victory, is interesting because it allows you to reroll your charges. However, unlike how it works in Age of Sigmar 3, you are going to have to decide to do the reroll charge ability before you've rolled the charge. So no more failing the charge and then rerolling it. You've got to be like, do you know what? This is really, really important. I'm going to reroll the charges before I roll it, which is important. Okay. Now we get into the new commands, and boy, do we get gnarly as hell. Okay. First one is Rally, comes back from Age of Sigmar 3, and as I said, is going to really showcase that we're going to see recursion, not as bad as we saw it previously, maybe, but that's how Age of Sigmar 3 started, with just Rally on a 6. I'm sure there'll be other armies that allow you to rally even better than the base Rally. So the first Rally you do, obviously, in the hero phase, and it's in any hero phase, whichever one. To rally, you pick a friendly unit that's not in combat and use this ability. You make 6 rally rolls of a d6, and for each 4+, you receive 1 rally point. Okay? For each rally point, heal 1 to that unit. And heal, bracket 1, seems to be a key word. So this is an ability I'm sure we're going to see constantly. You know, at the end of a combat phase, a vampire might heal 3, which is kind of like how the hunger works right now, but effectively something like that. So it's going to, the heal is also baked in. So to do a rally, any hero phase, roll 6 dice, any 4+ gets you a rally point. So it's fairly inconsistent, but it might be 3. And then you can heal a unit up to that. So if you've got a monster, heal it 3 if you rolled 3. The other one is you can spend a number of rally points equal to the health characteristic of that unit to return a slain model to that unit. Now, obviously you do the rally, you choose a unit, then you roll the dice, and that's where it gets quite spicy. So let's say I've got a 4-wound model in a unit I'd like to return. Well, it's a bit risky now. I say, I'm going to try and rally that unit. You'll roll your 6 dice, and you need to roll 4 4-ups to rally that model back in full, which is quite interesting. You can spend the rally points in any combination of the above. Unspent rally points are then lost. So this is much more effective for bringing back single wound models, which is great, which is kind of what you want. You know, you can bring back like 4 steel helms or 3 steel helms versus bringing back a storm drake guard or bringing back a storm vermin, not storm vermin, a storm fiend, or anything that's a big multi-wound model. So this is an excellent change, but it's also an excellent change I expect to see develop and kind of get away from itself, like we've seen in Age of Sigmar 3, because death armies will obviously be able to bring out more, etc., because, you know, rezzing and rallying is kind of their thing. The next one is redeploy, and this has changed a bit. You pick a friendly unit that is not in combat. This is all done, at the end of each phase. So rally will be done at the end of the hero phase, and redeploy is done at the end of the movement phase. And there's no trigger on this like there is currently, so it's just at the end, pick a unit. Pick a friendly unit that's not in combat to use this ability. Each one on that unit can move up to d6 inches. That move cannot pass through or end within range of an enemy unit, which is, so I don't need to be in range. So, you know, if in the next turn I'm planning on casting a spell and I'd like to be outside of unbind range, then at the end of their turn I could be like, oh, you haven't put your wizard close enough. I'm just going to move 2 inches away. If I roll it, I have. I'm going to be able to cast spells next turn. You're not going to be able to stop me. So there's going to be some really interesting strategic plays with this. And then there's going to be some absolute blunt trauma plays with this as well, in my personal opinion. But we'll get towards that at the end. Next up is 2 massive ones, covering fire and counter charge. Again, both of these done at the end of a phase. And the economies on this are nuts. Covering fire is wild. This is in your enemy shooting phase, for 1 command point, you pick a friendly unit that is not in combat to use this ability. Resolve shooting attacks for that unit, but all of the attacks must target the nearest visible enemy unit, and you must subtract 1 from the hit rolls for those attacks. Now, there's an important thing in that me, as kind of the controlling player, which is a high skill ceiling thing, which is great, is I can put like, I know, a trashy unit of something that's really cheap chaff in front of their big shooting brick. Let's think of like 6 long strikes or 10 bow snakes or something like that. And then I put like a cheap unit in front of it and I'm like, there you go. And then, you know, obviously in my turn, you decide that's it. They're going to shoot that and they're going to wipe that unit out. Of course, I've got counterplay to this, but this is crazy strong. Sure, it's at -1 to hit. However, if you've got abilities that hit on 6s, like 6s and mortals and stuff like that, and if you allow your opponent to use their big shooting unit in every one of your turns, think of a Carajon Overlord Ironclad. Think that every single turn, it's going to get to shoot at the closest enemy unit. Even if it does, that feels like great economy for 1 command point. That feels very effective in my personal opinion. And so I expect to see shooting bricks try to use that as much as possible. So effectively, a shooting unit is going to shoot in every turn. That's what it's saying. So there we go. Next up is Countercharge. Now, this costs 2 command points and is obviously really, really good because it costs 2 command points. You declare this, pick a friendly unit that is not in combat to use this ability. That unit can use a charge ability as if it were the charge phase. So, initially, this doesn't sound overly good because what would happen is, let's say, you have a unit near my, let's pick a unit of Steel Helms, and I'm like, I'm going to countercharge that unit. Well, it's your turn, so you're still going to get to activate into me. Absolutely fine. Where it works the other way is if my unit is a Maw Crusher and your unit is Steel Helms. So your Steel Helms are near me trying to hold an objective, and it's your turn and I'm going to charge you. Sure, you can activate with your Steel Helms into my Maw Crusher first, but you probably aren't going to kill my Maw Crusher, and my Maw Crusher is probably going to kill your guys. And so this is very effective, but also incredibly effective on monstrous units. Very, very effective on monstrous units, because in a single model, you're bringing, and I mean, it would be true for like Varangard, anything that will always win the fight versus whoever it's charging, doesn't mind being hit first. So high armor units with high output, so we call those bruiser units, are going to be just so good. Okay, I want to keep going. All right, next one is Magic Intervention. This permits the reacting player to cast a spell or chant a prayer in the opponent's turn. How nuts is that? Casting spells in the opponent's turn. And sure, we don't know how good the spells are going to be right now. All we've seen is Nagash's War Scroll. So I'm sure you're having horror stories like Croak casting in the enemy turn. Like, that's going to be scary for me. Probably the spells have been reduced, but that might not be true. You might see Searing White Light from Teclis cast in every single turn. I'm not sure if it's going to be there, but you will find whichever army has the best spell will just spend a point to cast it in every turn, which is fun. There is a negative, though. Pick a friendly wizard or priest to use this ability. That friendly unit can use a spell or prayer ability as appropriate, as if it were the hero phase. If you do so, subtract one from the casting rolls or chanting rolls made as part of that ability. Okay? Amazing. So it is minus one, but probably if you're using a good caster, they have pluses to cast, reroll cast, those other things. This is good. Tactically, it's also really engaging as well. You could get really clever with it. Imagine, like, there's an ability for, like, plus one to hit and plus one to wound. A spell, sorry. And so I cast that at the enemy hero phase. Then I cast it on a unit of, let's say, Varangard. And then I countercharge with the Varangard. I could technically, getting this in the right combination, I could cast a spell on a unit of Varangard, redeploy the Varangard, then countercharge with the Varangard. It's pretty good. That will use all 4 of my CP in a turn. But I feel like that's enough. I feel like I'm happy with that. That's pretty good. Finally, Power Through is the last ability, and this is crazy. Finally, Power Through is activated at the end of any turn, letting rampaging monsters and barreling chariots smash through infantry or scatter cavalry, dealing damage and moving through the unit, opening up new positions and opportunities. This costs 1 CP. Which I do not understand, but okay. Okay, so you declare it, you pick a friendly unit that charged this turn, so you need to have charged. To use this ability, then you must pick an enemy unit in combat with it to be the target. That target must have a lower health characteristic than the unit using this ability. So obviously, monsters good, infantry worse. Inflict D3 mortal damage on that target, that's sad, then the unit using this ability can move a distance up to its move characteristic. So fast units, also good. Vampire Lords on Zombie Dragons. It can pass through and then end that move within combat ranges of enemy units that were in combat with it at the start of the move. Oh, it cannot, sorry, end within combat with him, but not those other enemy units. It does not have to end the move in the combat. This effectively means you'd be able to like move through a line of models. So if you try to screen something, your monster is now going to basically just barrel through the screen and end up on the other side, which is very good, which is very, very strong. Lastly, they gave us a little brief look at what a War Scroll looks like, and they've looked at the Stormstrike Chariot. They've showcased the fact that the Stormstrike Chariot adds bonuses onto the move through ability, where you add additional range to that move, and it does D3 mortal damage, an additional D3 mortal damage, and moves an additional D6 inches for that ability, which is pretty good. Also, we have seen a bunch of new weapon profiles. For instance, we see that the Great Storm Bow is anti-infantry, and then what it does, it adds plus one to the rend. So a Great Storm Bow shooting at infantry becomes rend 2. Stormtrike Axe on the charge adds plus one damage to its profile. The Great Stormbow also has crit two hits, which on a roll of a six to hit is going to generate two wound rolls, or what we used to call exploding sixes, which is what we've seen. An interesting thing about this is that it's pretty much exactly the profile of what the Stormstrike Chariot looked like previously. Same health, same save, same move. Similar to exactly what we saw in the Gash, but different abilities written on them. If this ends up being true, then immediately you want to go to those shooting units that could shoot twice, those monstrous units that are going to be able to move through, countercharge, and those other things are going to be a big deal. This is wild. Wild, wild stuff. I'm already thinking about what you can do with this, especially countercharge feels really good. And don't forget, if you go back and watch the regiment's video, you can have something like four more crushers because each one can be in a regiment. It's a hero. And as long as they're sub 500 points, you can be like monster, monster, monster. Now I can countercharge with each one of those monsters whenever I want to. I can potentially move through enemy units. That feels pretty good. Countercharge feels very good, especially into objectives on large bases. And again, don't forget just how massive a 6.5-inch base is or a 160mm base. So your Archeons and those other things are going to be very, very solid. Yet you can only do the one countercharge, but you can have four more crushers. Like, that's a lot of the board that you can threaten. That's what I'm trying to say. You have one there and you're like, oh no, that's a problem. Or you might charge one more crusher and then the other one countercharges you. Now you're fighting two, which no one wants to do. Anyway, there are some insane changes there. The combos are whirring through my head. There are so many ideas spinning. I'm so excited about Age of Sigmar 4. Literally anything can happen now. It's going to be crazy. There's army builds are out the window. Combos are going to be all over the place. You're going to be able to, I mean, just based on seeing the Nagash War Scroll, you're going to be able to move them up 10 inches, redeploy six, countercharge in your opponent's turn. So now you've got 16 inches potentially plus a 2d6 charge, move through. You're at the back, a movement 10 model is going to be at the back of the board turn one or turn two. Basically, give up a turn, get some more CP. So many decisions to make. It's going to be really fun. Let me know what you think. I've loved going through this information. I'm going to do it through the whole of Age of Sigmar 4, the lead up to Age of Sigmar 4, and be reviewing everything for Age of Sigmar 4. So let me know if you like it. Leave some comments. Please do subscribe to my Patreon. Help support me create more stuff. That would be great. Thank you to everyone who already does. I'll see you guys soon.